was, I want us to live, and in fact, if you watch tonight's party political broadcast, I say this line very clearly, I want us to live in a society that is integrated.
Right, that is perhaps what you want to say today, but what you said the other day was that you want to live in a community where our kids play football in the streets of an evening and live in a society which is at ease with yourself, because if you have immigrations at these sorts of levels, integration doesn't happen.
Well, that's right. We've had uncontrolled mass immigration for 15 years, something quite unprecedented.
What did you mean by saying that, by linking children not playing in the streets to immigration? Because that's the question I'm asking.
Because they live in different parts of towns now. We have segregated communities within not just our cities, but many of our market towns as well. And that is not
Which are the market towns where we wouldn't see children playing in the streets because of immigration?
Just travel up the eastern spine of England.
Okay, where exactly?
And just, well, go to Peterborough, you know, go to Boston, go and see the fact that we don't have integration and what's happened, unsurprisingly in some ways, what's happened with very large numbers of people coming is you get quarters and districts of towns and cities that get taken over by one particular
group. Children therefore don't play in the streets.
Where children don't mix particularly. No,
The opposite of what you're saying then is if you go to areas of low integration, we'll see children happily playing in the streets and society at ease with itself.
Well, you know, I've spent time in places like Belfast and I've seen what divided communities are like. You know, I went earlier on in the last decade, I went to Oldham. And I saw, you know, communities living completely separately.
Yes, that's different. I'm asking you about the point you made about children in the streets. Isn't it the fact that the reason you don't see children playing in the streets much anywhere in the country is because times have changed. People worry about safety and stranger danger. That is why it is the case.
Well, that's a slightly separate question. What I'm arguing for is a responsible immigration policy that allows communities to integrate. And, you know, we did this very well, didn't we? You know, from the Second World War up until about 1998, when the doors were opened, actually, we had the best levels of integration of any country in Europe. What I'm saying is, let's return to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in the question of what are the numbers, then, you've talked about normality. Mm-hmm. Being what you want to return to. Last time you were on this programme, you said that there were no caps. And yet this week, you started talking about numbers again. No, let me finish. You started talking about numbers again, and you talked about wanting to see a net level of 30,000 people a year. Is that a cap?
It's a target. Caps are ludicrous. You can't have a cap.
What is the difference between a target and a cap?
You cannot have a cap for net migration because you cannot, as a government, stop people leaving the country. All right? And that's where the figures are impossible for anybody to set.
Why bother using numbers then?
Well, it's the government that have done this. It's David Cameron that set this precedent.
Yes, but you're choosing to talk numbers again now.
Well, what I'm saying is this. That if you go right back to 1950, let's take the 1990s. Let's look at 1990 to 1997 until Labour got in. Through that period of time, net migration to Britain ran between 30 and 50,000 people a year. That was normality. It was normality in the 1990s. It was normality for the decades that went before. That is where we want to get back to. And it's not actually, you know, that hard to do. What we're saying very clearly is we do not need any more unskilled migrant labour coming into Britain. We have enough already.
Right, but what is a skilled worker then? Define a skilled worker.
Well, the whole point about having an Australian-style point system, and that's what we want to have, OK? At the moment, we have an open door, and I'm hoping tonight in the debates we might get some honesty on this, though I perhaps somewhat doubt it. You know, and you've got people coming with trades and skills who, as a result of which, are going to be earning more than the minimum wage.
What is a skilled worker? What we currently have. What is skilled, what is unskilled?
What we currently have is a flood of labour coming into Britain taking minimum wage jobs. And what has happened as a result of this is the minimum wage, which was designed to be a floor for workers in this country, has in fact become a ceiling on 1.5 million people. And
that is a carpenter a skilled worker?
Yes, he is.
Is a plasterer a skilled worker?
Yes.
An electrician?
Yes.
Right. Well, lots of those jobs are done by migrants from Eastern Europe, for example.
Yes.
So they would still, they'll be able to stay there. Their skills will be needed.
Well, in many cases, undercutting British workers, not always up to the same levels of quality. I mean, the battle here is between the big corporates, and the big corporates want the EU's open market because it gives them cheap labour. Now, you've seen, you know, throughout the course of this week, a battle over the corporates. Labour began their campaign arguing in favour of the corporates. 100 or so corporates came out yesterday and backed David Cameron. But the argument is this. The argument is that actually what this has done it's driven down the wages and it's damaged the lifestyles of millions of British families.
Right,
and I don't think this whole debate...
You talk about this Australian system as the ideal. Of course, that is one that includes a points-based system and a cap. Now, the way the Australian system works is that you get assigned a certain number of points depending on what your skill is. And a lot of those, there are points assigned to skills such as carpenter, joiner, plasterer, electrician. So if we adopted the system, is it not the case that a lot of the Eastern European migrants who are doing those jobs in this country would stay?
Yes, but the point is, nobody has suggested that anybody that came legally would not be allowed to stay legally.
No, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking you, they would stay, wouldn't they? Because they would be skilled and their skills would be needed.
The point about an Australian-style point system is you choose both on quantity and on skill base, and on whether they have a criminal record, and all of those.
And you have a cap. Every year, the Australian Immigration Minister decides what the required number is.
I mean, I'll give you an example.
So what is your cap,
Well, let me give you an example. Last year, 27,000 people, skilled people, came to Britain from outside the European Union to take jobs in this country that were high-value jobs where they would not be a drain on our public services. So that gives you an idea of roughly what the numbers are. What we're talking about is, and I think maybe we're putting the cart before the horse here in talking details of the Australian-style point system. What I'm saying is this.
It's not the detail. The broad principle is points-based system and cap.
Well,
so do you accept the idea that a cap... If you want the Australian system, you need a cap as well.
You can cap the number of people coming, but what you can't do is put a cap on net migration because that is mathematically impossible.
What is your cap on people coming then? Do that part because you've accepted that's possible. What is your cap on people coming in?
Well, it is below 50,000 a year. All right, it is below 50,000 a year. Simple as that. But this whole debate, we've been tied up with caps for 5 years. It has devalued the debate. What we're not actually addressing is the fact that 624,000 people settled in Britain last year and that we have no control over the numbers that settle this year or next year. And we're not having... I mean, let's be honest. We cannot have any debate about immigration, about numbers, all the while we're members of the European Union. And that, I hope, is what's going to get discussed tonight.
And that is why you've put no to the EU right up there on the pledge card.
Yes.
Let's just explore then what the UK would look like in your ideal vision. So you'd have this cap on 50,000 people coming to the country.
Coming, not net migration,
yes,
but coming.
Coming to this country, that would be your cap. Are you prepared for the country to take an economic hit for that? We had John Cridland of the CBI on the programme a bit. You did listen, right. And you heard him say then that businesses couldn't operate effectively without immigration. Are you prepared to take an economic
hit? Well, I mean, the CBI they represent the big corporate businesses. They represent the Brussels view of the world. They represent the status quo. And they represent a system where it's very difficult for small and medium-sized competitors to come up and challenge them. What I'm saying very clearly is this. We will go on doing business with Europe, regardless whether we're members of the European Union or not. After all, the UK is now the Eurozone's biggest export market in the world.
Are you prepared for our country to get poorer with lower numbers of people coming here, with lower immigration?
I don't believe that to be true. But if you said to me that if we carry on with current immigration, our population will hit 75 million by 2030, but we'd all be slightly better off, I would say I'd prefer not to be better off and have a country that didn't go to 75 million, where young people could aspire to buy houses and where British families could get jobs and a decent standard of living. Some things matter more than money. And I think the shape of our communities and the sense of contentment living in the country matters more.
What matters to you in terms of the kinds of people who are members of your party and who are candidates? Because it seems that you continue to be dogged by difficulty with people getting into the news for the wrong reasons. Just a couple of very recent examples. You have the MEP who compared Hamza Yusuf of the SNP to Abu Hamza. You had the candidate who's no longer a candidate comparing President Obama to Adolf Eichmann. You had the expenses issue just the other day where you had to expel Janice Atkinson, who was a candidate from the party.
Clearly the Janice Atkinson thing was a problem. But isn't it interesting that when a UKIP candidate says something inappropriate, it's a major news story, so major that you interview me about it on the Today programme. I wonder when Nick Clegg's in, whether you'll be discussing the candidate from the Lib Dems that withdrew last week with very serious child abuse.
You have a lot of these people. There are other examples.
No. But isn't this interesting?
Do you wonder, look in the mirror and wonder, why does this keep happening to my party? Do you ever wonder if it could be about you. It's your face, after all, that's all over the literature.
I seriously wonder whether we actually have a fair system where any indiscretion from a UKIP person is a major story, and when councillors from the other parties actually get imprisoned...
Are you really suggesting... I mean, it's just not the case that people from other parties are getting into as much trouble
No. Councillors from other parties over the last year, 13 of them have gone to prison. Can you imagine if one of my councillors went to prison, the scale of media row we'd see around that?
Right, but we're talking about your candidates. Here are some other examples. There's the one who was a UKIP candidate in Wales, who was vice president of the Traditional Britain Group. Its Facebook page once called for black people to be requested to return to their natural homelands, whatever those are. You had another one who was forced to leave the party after very derogatory comments that were reported in the Daily Mail about gay people. It goes on and on.
Yeah, I mean, we have had a problem with some Conservative defectors. Nearly every one of these cases is when people have come from the Conservative Party too. I mean, it's interesting. Last year I was here, there was a UKIP town councillor who said derogatory things about gay marriage. It was a national news story. It led on some of the BBC bulletins. He had been a Conservative councillor for 22 years saying the same things. I am not for one moment saying that everybody in UKIP has been perfect. Far from it. And we weed out those that do say or do inappropriate things.
Do you ever wonder why these sorts of people, the kind of person who compares President Obama to Adolf Eichmann or Hamza Yusuf of the SNP to Abu Hamza, why are they attracted to UKIP?
Well, as I say, I'm perfectly happy for you to ask me all this, provided you ask the other party leaders the same things, which I know you won't do.
Well, perhaps that's because they just do not have as many candidates, parliamentary candidates and MEPs, prominent people in the party running into these kinds of
problems. They have serving councillors serving terms in prison they've been convicted of in the last year, and that doesn't make a news story.
Finally, is this all proving a bit harder now than it seemed 6 months ago, all that you anticipated? I mean, here you are, you've dipped in the polls.
Well,
and it is not looking as rosy as it was, for instance, at the end of last year.
Well, 2014 was remarkable. We won the European elections. We had two surprise defections, principled resignations, and we won by-elections that people didn't think we could win. We've dipped a little bit since then, but we're now in the short campaign. Ofcom have ruled. We're one of the four major parties. We've got the opportunity to get our messages across, and we are the only party. You know, we're quite distinctive. We're the only party saying we should govern ourselves, not be part of political union with Europe, control our borders and put in place an Australian-style points system. And actually, that is a strong, positive message. And what I really think is this. UKIP will succeed or fail in this general election depending on the number of people who didn't vote in 2010. Can I get those people who didn't vote in 2010 but agree with me to turn out on May the 7th? That's the key.